It's time for No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. Here are your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren from the Area Agency on Aging.
It's time for No Copay Radio here on Cozy 101.1, another Sunday morning at 7:30. We are glad you're here. And of course, by now, you know, we're brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging, 303-480-6700. Now, I'm Murphy Houston, and my partner, Jayla Sanchez Warren, who's the boss over there at the Area Agency on Aging, will not be here today. She gets a little vacation once in a while, and that's where she is now. She'll be back next week. Joining us this morning is Dr. Jeffrey Dermer, a systems neuroscientist, a neurologist, a sleep medicine physician with expertise across multiple applications of telehealth delivery systems in high-performance and healthcare populations. Currently, Dr. Dermer supports multiple professional and academic organizations as a sleep and circadian rhythm consultant, and is the chief medical applications officer for Sleep Image, a Denver-based neuro sleep diagnostic and health management software company. Well, Doc, I understand I can call you Dr. Sleep because you're so involved with it. Is that okay with you?
Well, thanks, Murphy. I think that would be fine, although I'm sure that there's got to be a movie out there that's not a good reflection on Dr. Sleep.
Oh, yeah, I never thought about that. You're probably right.
Yeah.
It could be a little scary. But I'll tell you, Doc, this topic of sleep seems to affect everybody. And in the radio business where I am here at Cozy 101.1, I did the morning show for many, many years where you get up at 3 o'clock in the morning and I'm at work at 4, and that's how your life is. And then things change. But I still wake up 3 o'clock in the morning, it seems like.
Yeah.
My mind doesn't want change. How does sleep change as we get older? I guess that's a good question to start with.
Yeah, well, actually, it is a good question, and it is a circumstance that we all go through. So it's a real common issue that crops up as you get older. And it's actually something that evolves over your entire lifespan. So as a child, your sleep itself is not at all what it's going to be like when you're in your late 20s, early 30s, become a parent and have to deal with children. And then eventually, you have kids of your own and you're dealing with that and your job, as you mentioned, in the early morning hours.
Yeah.
That's a real common experience. The big issue here is, though, that our chronobiology, which is actually a big term that just basically means the biology that basically guides our 24-hour rhythms, changes over the course of our life. And so as you get a little older, we find that your chronobiology actually tends to get a little earlier. In that, I mean, you get sleepy a little earlier and you end up going to bed a little bit earlier and you also start to get up a little earlier. So that's something that's a natural biological process. It's not even it's not influenced really by what's going on in your life or your job. So it's something you might experience. It's at times something that can be annoying because
oh yes, it can be. It is annoying. I gotta tell you.
And that's actually the point in time where, you know, you can start to do things to augment that. And one of the things you can do is start to avoid light at certain times where it actually will make you feel sleepier earlier, or actually you'll feel sleepier earlier and start getting up earlier. And that is avoiding light in the early mornings in particular can be very helpful to help reduce that that alerting response that occurs in the morning. But even more so, adding a little light in the evening. So going out, and we have late nights now in the Denver area. You go out and watch the sunset at 8:30 or and you're out there till 9 o'clock with the glow in the background.
Right.
That can actually stimulate going to bed later, and that will help you wake up a little later. So thinking about that, particularly this time of year when there's so much light outside, you can take yourself outside if you're feeling sleepy around 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon. First off, avoid alcohol if you can, because that's something that will also make you sleepy. But don't jump to a caffeine or anything like that, because that'll end up making you wake up much more than you wanted to. But just getting some light and going outside and doing some activities in the evening will help to prolong your sleep onset. And going to bed a little later will actually help you naturally wake up a little bit later. But, that's just one of the natural things that we all go through a little bit. But the other thing that happens as you get older is that you definitely get a little bit of an impact from pains and just chronic issues that you may have had for years.
Right.
You know, I play sports and I played football in high school and then ended up rowing in college and afterwards. And there are parts of my body that remind me of that every evening.
Yeah, I got that problem too, Doc, believe me.
Yeah, for sure. And a lot of things that occur in large joints like hips and shoulders – can make it very difficult as you get older to stay asleep or remain asleep in the positions that you're used to. So one thing you can do is really address those aches and pains directly. And so using cold packs to reduce inflammation in the evenings before you go to bed, using a little bit of non-steroidal anti-inflammatories like ibuprofen can be helpful, but also working with your body to find a mattress and bedding that's comfortable. And this is actually a missed point by a lot of folks, that they suffer with the same bed they've had for 10 years.
Yeah.
Because it's an investment. But the thing is, it's an investment, if you think about it, on a day-to-day basis, that's actually very inexpensive because you use it every day.
Sure.
You use it for 8 hours every day. So going and finding and spending time in a mattress store, and I did that just recently, right off of I-25, one of those big mattress stores. And you just walk around and try all the different types of mattresses and sleep in lay in the position you're going to be laying in. Find out if there's, you're not going to fall asleep, but just feel the sensation of the pressure on the different areas that are a problem. That can be very helpful. And as we get older, that becomes more of an issue, as well as getting hot at night. Women going through menopause and being perimenopausal and postmenopausal may find, having a cool top mattress or something that actually cools at night very, very helpful with sleep itself. So that's the other thing I can offer everyone out there.
Well, that's good advice, though. That thing about the light, I never heard that before. That's amazing. I'm going to try that.
It works just the opposite for kids who are going through adolescence and young adults who find that they can't get to bed till like 2 o'clock in the morning, and they wake up way too late. So we actually add light therapy for those folks in the mornings capture their wake up time, and then we avoid light at night for just the same purpose. So they wear blue blocking glasses and things like that,
sure.
And sunglasses. And that's actually one more point I can make, is that if you're having difficulty sleeping in the daytime or in the mornings, and you're getting up too early, wearing some sunglasses in the morning will to some degree help a bit, because it will block the activating rays of the sun, just like having light blocking shades.
Sure.
So if you can make the environment you're in darker in the morning, you might actually sleep in a little bit more. In the afternoons, I would suggest folks who are having problems going to sleep too early, not wear their sunglasses in the evening, because you don't want to block light. You want to make more light available for your brain to activate for wakefulness.
Some great advice. Another thing I never heard of before, the sunglass thing. Holy cow. Look how good you are. No wonder you're a doctor of sleep.
This is more science than medicine, by the way.
I don't know. Yeah. But I do wonder, does sleep really affect your health well-being as you grow older, as you get?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And in fact, there's a lot of studies that demonstrate this impact, not just on adults, but also on kids. So we see that sleep itself, adequate sleep, and I like to divide sleep up a little bit so people can understand that it's not a monolith. Your requirements, or what's called adequate sleep, really fall into three neuroscientific domains. The first is sleep duration, so the amount of sleep you get in a 24-hour period. And what we know from many studies across the world, actually in large populations, is that if you sleep in the 7 to 9 hour range as an adult, you are in the sweet spot in terms of your health development, your well-being, your mental health. And there are a number of studies that show, even if you have a chronic disease like hypertension or diabetes or anything related to the metabolic, cardiometabolic area, as well as even things like mental health issues.
Sure.
If you sleep in that 7 to 9 hour window, you're much less likely to have complications. You're much less likely to have accidents. You're much less likely to even die for any cause.
Wow.
So if you sleep in the sweet spot duration-wise on a daily basis, that's one thing to think about. The second is timing of sleep. And timing of sleep is sort of what we were just talking about, the chronobiology, when you sleep during the day. And as I mentioned, that changes over your lifetime. But if you keep it consistent, even if it's off a little bit for your own lifestyle, but it's consistent, it tends to be much, much more healthy in terms of people on shift work. Like you mentioned, you're getting up early to come into the studio, or like for a physician like myself, going in early to see patients or being there overnight or on call. That disruption in your sleep timing turns out to be a significant impact on your well-being, on just how you feel, and also as well on things like your risk for things like cancer. So the World Health Organization mentioned that shift work, this was years ago, said that shift work was actually a pro-carcinogenic.
Wow.
So it should be considered when we look at even shift differentials and paying people more money to put themselves at medical risk. So timing is a big part of this. And then the last one is a little less obvious, which is sleep quality. Now, if your duration and timing metrics are on, but you're not feeling rested in the morning, typically that means you have a quality issue, meaning that you're not going through your regular sleep cycles at night properly, or they're being interrupted by something. And that's where medical folks like myself come in and try to help people understand that during their sleep, there are things that can be treated that are interrupting their sleep, like snoring or sleep apnea or restless leg syndrome, periodic limb movements, insomnia, just as a diagnosable condition as well. And there are a number of other medical conditions that lend themselves to interrupting sleep, things like diabetes, even heart failure, and a number of other conditions that actually have sleep problems associated with them, things like depression and anxiety. Typically, we see anxiety and depression causing insomnia. So when we treat one, we often get a benefit in both.
Right. I tell you, that anxiety thing's a big – I think 90% of people must suffer from sleep lack because of anxiety.
Well, you know, it's funny you mention that, because there was a recent study that you may have seen out in the press talking about loneliness and people developing sleep problems. And this actually is relevant as we get older. Oftentimes we find ourselves in situations where, you know, we're alone more often than not. And that has actually become a major issue in the United States. And this study looked at a large population in the health and retirement study. And it's part of a larger study that started in the 1990s. And this study actually showed that around half of the people in the middle age population had issues especially over 65, nearly half of them had issues of insomnia, and insomnia symptoms were specifically related to loneliness.
Oh boy!
And we're not saying insomnia causes loneliness, but loneliness may be actually the signal is insomnia. That if you feel like you're not sleeping well, you may need to take some other steps to, you know, engage in life a bit more, get out there. And, you know, maybe even get online during the day to help combat that, because it turns out insomnia symptoms are associated with a lot of other risks. We know that if you have insomnia, the risk of cardiovascular disease, dementia, even being hospitalized, and the risk of death go up.
Wow.
So if something you're experiencing, it's a great opportunity to take it to your doctor and have this discussion, because docs are now very much aware about the impact of anxiety. In fact, we were told by the governmental agencies here in the United States that suggest best practices for physicians, that everyone in the United States between the ages of something like, I think it was 8 and 65, need to be screened for anxiety. And this may be a post-COVID issue, but it also is something that we probably never recognized as we are now, that anxiety plays a huge role in our problems that we're having socially, the social isolation and the sort of grouping up of different even political groups and going after people. A lot of it is related to this issue of not sleeping well and also having anxiety.
Wow. I believe that. I do believe that.
The study was wonderful. It really demonstrated that, you know, this is a big part of our problem right now, is that we have so many folks that are suffering with poor sleep and anxiety, and we need to sort of unwrap the onion here in a way so that people understand that it's not just one thing that causes, it's not just insomnia causing anxiety, but it's anxiety causing insomnia, and that sort of spirals in a negative fashion.
Right,
so somebody can step
geez.
In and, hey, let's get you sleeping better, or, hey, let's start an anti-anxiety medicine, or let's start a cognitive behavioral therapy.
Sure. Starts with your doctor, though. See your doctor first and go from there. Good advice there. We've been talking with Dr. Jeffrey Dermer, who obviously is known as Dr. Sleep. This has been a great conversation, Doc, and I'm out of time already.
But my gosh.
Well, thank you, because I had a ton of questions I wanted to ask you, but that whole thing about lights and shades, I'm going, I never heard any of that before. So thank you for that information. I appreciate it very much, and thanks for coming on No Copay Radio today.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure, and I'd be happy to come back and talk more about anything.
Oh, yeah. There's going to be a part two to this interview, I promise you. So we'll get you back soon, but thanks for coming on No Copay Radio today. I appreciate it.
You bet.
Thank you. And thank you guys for listening. No Copay Radio on Cozy 101.1. We'll be right back with more.
We now continue with No Copay Radio with your hosts, Murphy Houston and Jayla Sanchez Warren.
Yep, we're back. It's No Copay Radio here on Cozy 101.1. Murphy Houston here, and good morning to you. Brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Governments Area Agency on Aging. 303-480-6700. Run by my partner, Jayla Sanchez Warren, who's on vacation this week. She'll be back next week. And remember, you can go to KOSI101.com to hear all of our shows on No Copay Radio, right there on our website. Always fun to catch up a little bit. And joining us now is Justin Russo. Now, Justin is the Director of Programming for Music and Memory, a nonprofit organization that helps individuals with a wide range of cognitive and physical conditions to engage with the world, ease pain, and reclaim their humanity through the use of personalized music. And Justin, welcome to No Copay Radio.
Thanks so much. It's great to be here today.
I'm very excited to talk about this because I'm interested in music and memory. I've heard a lot of information about how good it is for the various topics that you're going to talk about. How did this get started, and what is your mission?
Okay, great first question. So music and memory started about 12 years ago with this commonly held understanding that the music we love, our favorite music, is deeply rooted in our conscious and unconscious brains. Now, as amazing as that idea is, it becomes really even more important when the functioning of the brain begins to deteriorate, as it happens normally during the aging process, but especially for people living with dementia and other types of physical and cognitive loss. Because what we've learned through a number of studies is that favorite music can actually reawaken the brain, allowing someone to converse, to socialize, and ultimately to be more present in their own lives. And as you can imagine, that's a wonderful gift to give to someone.
Oh, absolutely.
That's how music and memory got started, and that is our mission, to empower healthcare organizations to use music therapeutically in this way to help people in need.
So I saw part of the introduction here that it helps ease pain. Explain that.
Sure. Okay. Well, you know, pain is something that, you know, we all feel. But if you can get someone away from the pain, if you can distract from the pain, they're not going to feel it as much. And that's really what favorite music can do, right? You know, we've all had those moments where, you know, we're feeling off or we're feeling like something hurts or we're in pain. But, you know, if we're having a good conversation or we're laughing to, a good joke, we don't feel it as much. And that's really what music can do. And actually, you know, when we're listening to our favorite songs, it actually releases opioids in the brain. So when we're connecting with those memories through the music, it really is a feel-good sense of happy memory that we're getting. So what studies are showing now is that, you know, for people who listen to their favorite music on a regular basis, they're showing a significant decrease in reported chronic pain for that reason, because they're able to get away from it, and that's important for improving quality of life.
It's funny, we hear that a lot here at the station where you're on. Cozy 101.1 is basically a music station, and we play songs that we've... Yeah, we are in the same business. And people will say, hey, I'm having a bad day, but I turned you guys on and I heard this song and I felt better. So now that all makes sense to me. What do you mean you felt better? Well, now I know. Thanks, Justin, for clearing that up so I can explain it to them. And it does make sense when you hear your favorite song or a good song, you kind of take your mind off what's bad at that particular moment, right?
Exactly, because you're connected to the memories attached to the song, you know, and that can really put us in a much better place.
For sure. And I've heard other pieces of information about the work you do with the cognitive end of this or with dementia or Alzheimer's. How does that work? I mean, and it doesn't last forever, that moment away and things seem differently and more normal when you hear music you like, but it doesn't last forever, does it?
No, it doesn't. So our approach is simple and it's effective. So what we do is we train healthcare staff how to create and offer personalized music playlists for the people they support. And through the proactive use of the music, you open up this window where once the music has been playing for a while and the person is more aware and more social, then the music can stop. And there's this carryover effect where the effect of the music will linger beyond the music being played. And that there's a window of opportunity there, and that can usually last anywhere between 30 and 45 minutes. And that's where you can see a lot of these therapeutic benefits. And that's what we train healthcare staff to use that window of opportunity to enhance people's quality of life. I'll give you a good example.
Sure.
So, as is often the case, people may have issues with nutrition or even with late-stage dementia, swallowing or the eating experience. And so if you listen to the music proactively before mealtimes, usually 30 minutes before each meal of the day, you'll see an improvement in their understanding of an ability to follow cues and the tasks in front of them and to be more aware of what's happening. So you'll see those issues improve. And it's because of that window of opportunity that they're able to do that, because they're just more aware of what's happening and life is just less overwhelming in that moment. And that's really one of the hallmarks of dementia, is the confusion can make everyday situations overwhelming. I'll give you another quick example.
Sure.
It is often the case that transitioning to and from different environments can cause distress for people with dementia. This you can see both in residential care, but also for family caregivers at home who struggle every day to help their loved ones go to a medical appointment or
right.
whatever the case may be.
Right.
But if you play the music proactively before those moments of transitioning, again, you have that window of opportunity where they're more aware and more able to handle it on their own. So suddenly, if you take someone to a very loud medical waiting room, that can be overwhelming, right? Or if you have to transition to transportation or something like that. But when they're in that immersive headphone environment, loving the music and just being, in touch with all those wonderful memories, it can make the whole situation much better. And you can actually avoid the distress episode altogether.
Tell me, though, how long does they have to listen to the music? What if they put their headsets on that's playing their music? Would it be good to leave it on all day, or is that a little too much?
Well, I listen to music all day. I don't know about you.
Well, I'm into business, so I listen quite a bit, too. So,
yeah. Well, that's a great question, and I'm glad you asked. So what we teach is, depending on where someone is in the aging process, it may take a little bit longer for them to have a positive response to the music. Now, responses can be immediate, and they can include, tapping fingers, laughing, and talking about memories. But depending, again, where someone is in the aging process, it can take a little longer, sometimes 30 minutes for the music to have its effect.
Oh,
so,
boy.
We always say, if you think you've got the right song, that those songs that are really going to light somebody up, don't be afraid to play the whole song. And if you really think you're onto something, it's okay to play it again at a later time, because you're working with that person and their level of need.
Wow. A lot of science behind it. And that's probably a question I should ask you. Talk about the science behind music in the brain and how that all works.
Sure. Well, I should say, right off the bat, that music and memory was started by music therapists who saw the need for a scalable model. At the time, there were only maybe 7,000 music therapists in the U.S., and they understood that there were just, while some people need the more intensive help of a music therapist, there are so many more people who could benefit out there simply by having access to their favorite music. And now, thanks to technology, iPods and all the little devices that are more or less ubiquitous in our lives, this is now possible in residential care and at-home care where it just wasn't before. So, this all comes from a very clinical place in origin,
right?
And that's why the science is so important to us. Now, with regard to music in the brain, as any music therapist will tell you, there are certain processes in the brain that lead to function that can be interrupted for a number of different reasons, dementia being one of them. But you can initiate those sequences by using music. And it doesn't even necessarily have to be the whole song, although for what we do, it's generally favorite music. But a music therapist will tell you that it can also be rhythm, or the beat pulse can also be used to initiate this function as well. So you can actually help people in a variety of different ways using music, and there's so much science behind it. But essentially what you're doing is you're reconnecting, to different parts of the brain through music. And that's what's so wonderful about it, because the music that we love is actually cements itself in so many different parts of the brain that even if you have late-stage dementia, the music can still reach you. And that's really the wonderful part of the science that has benefited us so much, that even if someone has been affected to the point where they can barely function, you can still reach them with music, because it's the music that we love cements itself in so many different parts of the brain.
It's amazing, and it lasts forever, apparently, if you can use that music again to bring out joy for these people that are struggling. That's amazing.
It gives, you know, musicians will talk about hooks and leads.
Yes.
I mean, it gives us a whole new sense for what that means, right? I mean, this idea that it stays with us. And this is the music that we love the most from when we were teenagers. So we
sure.
carry this with us through it for decades and decades, and it stays with us. It becomes part of who we are. It becomes part of our mojo, right?
Yeah, that's a good point for sure. We're talking with Justin Russo, who is the Director of Programming for Music in the Memory. So are there age areas that work more? Obviously, as you age yourself, the music helps better. But how about people maybe in their 40s or 50s? Does it have the same effect?
I mean, I think it can connect you with memories, and I think that can, you know, put you in a better place. You know, I'm in my 40s now, I don't mind telling you. And, you know, I routinely listen to music every day, and I have, you know, it helps me all the time. I listen to soft rock as it happens, so I'm glad to be on this station.
Yeah, you're on a perfect
quite
station.
Regularly,
yeah.
And it always brings me back. You know, when I listen to 10cc or any of those good acts from back in the day, it always brings me back to when I was 15 or you know, 20 years old, you know, when life was, my adulthood was really starting. And that's really the important range for cementing memories with music, just because it's such a pivotal moment in our lives. But it's not the only time when that can happen. So technically speaking, you know, you could enhance someone's quality of life at any point in their life using music.
Wow, that's a great technology. But I'm curious, though, for those that are dealing with a family member or a friend that are going through the dementia process, and you hear these stories about their favorite songs, how do you know their favorite songs? Do you ask them, or do maybe if you're a family member, you might remember Dad listening to Frank Sinatra? But how do you know?
Right. Well, you know, that's a really great question. So we teach a process called becoming a music detective, which is essentially that, you know, you're doing the work that needs to be done to find those 10 or 15 songs from someone's childhood, that were formative years rather, that really light them up. And, you know, we always say that the children or even the grandchildren may have some idea of what their parent or grandparent was listening, but you have to always take that with a grain of salt because, you know, obviously they weren't there
right
at the time.
Right.
You know, for example, you may know that they love country, but they might not like every country song. Or
right.
They even might like, they may say they like Frank Sinatra, but they really just like My Way.
Yeah, well, that's a good point. That's a good point. I like that. Say, listen, Justin, before I let you go, how can folks get involved with what you do? How can they support Music in Memory and find out more information? You must have a website.
We do. Thank you. So for anyone who's interested in learning more about bringing the power of music to a loved one at home, please visit our website, musicinmemory.org, where you can see all the research behind music in the brain and learn more about how music impacts the brain. And you can also get involved. We have a wonderful free guide called How to Make a Playlist for a Loved One at Home. And you can just download that for free and get started working with a parent or a grandparent and really getting the benefits out of music. So once again, that's musicinmemory.org.
Good stuff there, Justin. I appreciate you coming on No Copay Radio today. We'll get that word out all over the Denver area, and they'll probably be reaching out to you pretty quick, I would imagine.
Thank you, sir.
Thank
you. It was a pleasure.
Thank you, too. Justin Russo, the Director and Programming of Music and Memory. This is Murphy Houston. It's No Copay Radio. Thanks for listening. We're brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging. Remember this number, 303-480-6700. Have yourself a mighty fine week, and we'll talk to you, well, next Sunday on Cozy 101.1.
This has been No Copay Radio, brought to you by Dr. Cog, the Denver Regional Council of Government's Area Agency on Aging, 303-480-6700. Join us every Sunday at 7:30 here on Cozy 101.1.